This is 99% Invisible. I'm Roman Mars. Over the last decade, the volume and intensity of arguments about logos and logo redesign have increased substantially. I was wondering what this felt like to a designer, so I talked to one of my favorites. Michael Beirut is an AIGA medalist and partner at the international design consultancy Pentagram, where his work includes brand identity, logos, book design, and packaging. I had such fun talking with him, I just thought I'd put our conversation out as its own episode. You can listen to the full conversation and check out the images of some of the logos that we discuss on this episode's webpage at 99pi.org. Michael says that for a long time, no one understood what his job as a graphic designer really meant. But recently, that's changed.
I have to admit, now a lot of times people will say, oh, so do you do logos? Or they'll outright ask me what I think of some logo that's in the news. And this is entirely new and kind of startling and unnerving.
What is the most recent logo they've asked you about? Have you been asked about your own logo?
Oh, yeah. No, I was...
Like as if they didn't know?
Oh, no. Oh, absolutely. I was back in early 2015, I was engaged in a secret project, which was to design a logo for the campaign of... as of yet undeclared candidate for president, Hillary Clinton. And it launched. There was a huge amount of attention to this logo, which became ubiquitous, I think, the H with the arrow in it. And at one point, before it was widely known that I was a designer of it, I got an email from a magazine saying that they were convening a bunch of designers to volunteer to say how they would have designed the logo because it was so horrible. And so, like, we'd like to know, how would you have designed it if you could have done anything? And I sort of, I just said, I think I'll pass this time.
So tell me a bit more how the Hillary logo came about.
Very early on in 2015, the beginning of the year, I got a call from a team that was consulting with Hillary Clinton. They asked me whether I would volunteer my services to create a logo for Secretary Clinton. And what we wanted to do was exploit some of the characteristics that people had come to appreciate, I think possibly by accident, about the Obama logo, one of which was that it could be adapted into different forms. You could kind of like customize it for different groups of voters or different locations. And so we had this idea, like, what if we had a symbol that you could change every day if you wanted? You could make it celebrate LGBT rights one day and celebrate veterans the next day and then modify it for Memorial Day the day after that or Halloween the day after that. That required something very simple. So we came up with this very simple H with an arrow going through it. And it just kind of like proved to be a really interesting, malleable, lively system in the end. You know, at the same time, her opponent had a red hat with the slogan on the front of it, and that in a way was a logo for that candidacy. So I think there's the substance of what people are promising, and there's sort of a tangible bit of shorthand that kind of sums up what that promise is.
Do you remember the first time there was a public fight about a logo where normal people like got involved?
The Gap floated a redesign of its logo. It appeared online, and suddenly someone said, oh my God, The Gap, the retail store The Gap, is going to redesign its logo. And to the surprise of The Gap, all these consumers started getting like really agitated about it and started saying, save the old Gap logo, or this new logo is ridiculous. It looks, usually the criticism that's lodged against new logos is that my 4-year-old could have designed that new logo. Now, as I actually think that's a good thing. I like logos that 4-year-olds can design, actually. But to most people, they sort of seem like logos are sophisticated things that need to be designed with complicated equipment by skillful people. And they also assume that a lot of money was spent on logos, too. So how much was someone paid to do this thing? So I remember that The Gap had sort of let this logo float around out there that was not the blue box with the highly condensed serif letters GAP that we're all familiar with, but it was a lowercase Helvetica with this superimposed faded blue square kind of put off center on the letters. And for some reason, it just really aggravated people. I was surprised by that, and people asked me my opinion of it, and I don't remember a normal person ever asking my opinion about a logo before. But that became that was something that started happening more and more in the years to follow. So something about social media, something about the internet kind of has enabled all this to happen.
What is your least favorite aspect of the heated discussion around logos or redesigns when they happen publicly? Like, what's the type of criticism where you just like go, that's not, I don't care for that.
You know, if you design something new, people for some reason are so desperate to reconcile it with something they're already familiar with that they'll say, oh, that looks exactly like this other thing. And sometimes, depending on their frame of mind, they'll say, that looks exactly like this other thing that could be something vaguely smutty, like, you know, male or female anatomy or something like that. There's like so much of that goes around. And no matter what you design, you know, they have this very human need to kind of turn abstract shapes into something figurative that means something. I have to admit, I personally and privately need to make up a story that explains it. I can make up a lot of stories for every logo I've ever designed. To me, it's sort of the same pleasure I used to take as a kid. You know, sitting in my dentist's office looking at Highlights magazine, they have that thing called Hidden Pictures where it's just this drawing.
Those are the best.
It's the best, right? It's this drawing, and then it says, in the picture above, can you find, you know, a teapot, a hairbrush, you know, a basketball? And then you can't see any of those things. Then you see, oh, my God, like the hairbrush is the drapes on that window, and the basketball is that plate that's in the pantry, you know, and then all of a sudden you're finding all these things, and there's such pleasure in discovering those things. And if you've got a logo that has that bit of pleasure embedded in it, the most famous instance of it probably with contemporary logos is the arrow that's hidden in the FedEx logo. You know, but I think, you know, those little surprises just give people, you know, so much, you know, to give them a little bit of joy, make them feel smart, and actually make them complete the picture in their own mind. And you have the pleasure of looking at something and making a discovery.
Michael Beirut is a partner at Pentagram. I'm the proud owner of a signed copy of his book, How to Use Graphic Design to Sell Things, Explain Things, Make Things Look Better, Make People Laugh, Make People Cry, and every once in a while, change the world. Plus, he's the co-host, along with Jessica Helfand, of the podcast The Design of Business, The Business of Design. It's really good. 99% Invisible is Delaney Hall, Kurt Kohlstedt, Katie Mingle, Sharif Youssef, Avery Truffleman, Emmett Fitzgerald, Taryn Mazza, Sean Rial, and me, Roman Mars. Edited for radio by J.C. Howard. We are a project of 91.7 KALW and Radiotopia. Find out more at 99pi.org.